While in the break, Lino gave hockey a try. They asked him if he needed a stick, but he just used his nose.
It is the Catholic Guy Show in Toronto, Ontario. CatholicGuy.com, the Facebook, the Twitter, the Periscope, which is live streaming video. Earlier today on the Twitters, I wrote that today's show is going to be with Father Tom Rosica as my co-host, who's going to do some pre-Cana with me live on the air. Hashtag uh-oh. And I got a text from my fiance, and she wrote,
That's what I said too, Jill.
And I said, sure. And she goes, I should tune in. And I said, sure, if you'd like to. And she goes, well, I am kind of bored right now, so this will give me something fun to listen to. And I'm like, thank you for noticing that I'm a great way to kill boredom. I'm glad I can help with your boredom. And then I wrote back to her. Now, one of the reasons I wanted to bring this up, first of all, you're a priest.
Yes.
And
Catholic.
A Catholic one at that.
Faithful to the magisterium.
Not a Wiccan or anything like that.
No.
One of them Catholic priests. And you have to do marriage prep for people.
Tell me.
And you got to do the pre-Cana. These are all the things that one of the many joys, I guess is one way to say it.
Yes.
Of being a priest is getting to do this. And then do people ever challenge you, though, Father Tom? Because I'll be the first to admit, I've got tons of priest friends, and obviously I count you among them, but I've always was like, what are they going to do? We're going to sit down and really do this? We're going to talk about marriage to a guy who's not even married? I'm going to talk about marriage. But this is going to be sort of a running theme for the show, so this is something. What's the first thing that you would do? Now, my fiance is not here, of course, but so let's just pretend she is. Hi, Lino, I love you. Love you, too.
Okay, let's set up this stage. Now, let's say you're going to get married in Rome, I think.
Yes.
So I'm welcoming. You're coming for the first visit to this big church at the end of this long street. It's called St. Peter's.
Yes, that one.
You finally get through all the Swiss guards. It's not an ordinary rectory. And you come into this office. And I see you come in. I said, buongiorno.
Buongiorno.
Lino Rulli.
Si.
And la signora. And the first thing I'll say is, how long have you been married? Because I say, you're not the normal 24-year-old and everything else. And you tell me, no, padre, I'm 43 years old or whatever, how old you are. And signora, how old are you? And she tells me, I said, why you wait so long? Is something wrong? And then we kind of settled down, and I might give you a little espresso coffee.
Nice.
And normally what I do is I'll greet you both together, and then I'll have la signorina stay in the waiting room, and I talk to you. I said, okay, Lino, now sit down here.
All right.
Bravo. And we do the first form. We used to call it Form 1 or whatever it's called, Forma 1 in Italy, whatever they're saying. Your name, Lino Rulli.
Lino Rulli.
Baptized?
Yes, sir.
How old are you?
43.
And you go to church?
I go to church every Sunday.
Really?
And holy days of obligation.
Oh, this is not normal. And
yes.
What do you like about the church? Why are you Catholic?
Really, Father Tom, would that be a real question?
Why are you Catholic? I mean, why are you coming here, of all places, to come to St. Peter's Basilica in this small, intimate setting to have your wedding? You like big churches.
I love big churches.
Now, because this is an Italian wedding, I'll say, how many bridesmaids?
we're going to keep it very small, Father.
How many?
Well, that's actually something we're discussing right now. There could be as little as one, just a maid of honor and a groomsman. A best man, I mean.
Bravo, bravo. So it's not going to be a big show.
No, there could be two of each.
Okay.
I don't think we're going to have 10 of each.
I would ask you about your schooling. Where did you go to school? Your parents? What was your family
life
like?
Let's break this down. Now, you asked me why I'm Catholic, right?
Yeah, why are you Catholic?
Now, how do people usually respond to that type of question? Are they challenged by it, or do they go, well,
why?
I didn't even think about that.
I've done several hundred weddings. And I've had very beautiful couples to work with and prepare. I've also had some that have left a lot to be desired. Most of them have been really inspiring and edifying for me. My own staff, for example, I've married 12 of our staff. 8 were hatched in the house there. They fell in love working at Salt and Love, Salt and Light.
Salt and Love Television.
And then I got 2 more weddings this summer. I did one in Quebec City, and I have another one coming up in Chinese in a couple of weeks.
Ni hao.
Ni hao. Dolce, dolce. And anyway, they're admirable people, but I would talk to you about your faith commitment. How serious are you? Why getting married in the Catholic Church? So, why not go to a justice of the peace? Why not just get it over with? What's about the Catholic Church?
All right. I love the Catholic Church. Now, the number one question everybody has asked me is why even at St. Peter's specifically?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's not the normal route of things. Why at St. Peter's?
So for me, I grow up in St. Paul, Minnesota, at a little parish church called St. Ambrose. All right. It's the Italian-American church of my town.
I grew up in St. Ambrose Church, too, in Rochester.
See, there you go. Yeah. And but then, and right after, when like college, I guess when I was in my mid-20s, they closed the church. Now, this just happened. This happens in life. People...
So when they close a church, you should get married in St. Peter's. Is that it?
So then that was my parish. That's where my parents got married. That's where I got baptized. Lots of bad memories there, in other words. And then I think to myself, all right, well, I never really had a home parish. And I live in New York City. I've been there 9 years. There's a parish I go to regularly, but it's not. It doesn't feel like home to me. And I think I speak for many Catholics when I go, it doesn't feel like home, but I still want to go to
church. So St. Peter's feels more at home than a big church.
St. Peter's feels like my home parish. It's always felt like home to me. I walk in and I go, I'm home.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how I feel about the place.
Wow, that's and pretty good.
That's why I want to get married there. It's not like I have a weird thing for wanting to have...
It's not. Let's be clear. It's not the norm to go get married at the Vatican, but it's admirable when you wish to do that. And if you can say you feel at home in La Basilica San Pietro a Roma, you know, that's pretty impressive. Now, I would pursue the question and say, what does sacramental marriage mean for you? Do you have any idea what the sacrament is?
Not at all.
So we would develop that. We would use this as a teaching moment. And I'd try to figure out, why now are you deciding to get married?
Well, let's do that. Here's our pre-cana with Father Tom Rosica.
Lino, you've taken time to discern entering into this covenant, into this sacramental marriage, a little longer than usual. What brought you to this decision at age 43?
Now, by the way, Father Tom, you don't even know this, but this is exactly what the guys at the Vatican were saying. I'm not going to name drop, of course, but several of the guys, including one of the cardinals, his only thing, he's like, but you're so old. And I said, shut up. I go, first of all, you're like 40 years older than me.
If I were there, I would have asked you, are you bringing your son and daughter for the wedding? You know?
and they were all going, is this really your first marriage?
Yeah.
And I go, yeah. And they even pulled one of my cousins aside, she works at the Vatican. And they said, no, seriously, is this his first marriage? Yeah. And she's going, yes, this is his first marriage. And they said, well, no, he looks young. So he doesn't look 43, but we need to make sure. Okay, so to answer your question, I think like many people, I'm an idiot. What that means is I'm a selfish human being. And so my teens, of course, were just, you know, stupid high school years of nonsense.
And then God knows what the heck you did at St. John's.
And then St. John's University and college, I was focused on drinking and hanging out with my buddies. I ended up going to graduate school. I got a master's in theology because I tried to dry out a little and figure out what I was going to do. And then I lived in the Bahamas. I lived in Italy. I started working in TV. And TV was my love and TV was my passion. And I never found time for anything but my work. Work was number one to me.
Sounds because like me.
I wanted to accomplish something in my life. I wanted to be somebody.
Right.
I wanted to prove my worth through my profession.
But what brought you, why at this moment in your life did you decide to say, I'm biting the bullet now. Now I'm serious. I found somebody and we want to sacramentalize this marriage.
I mean, it's enough already. I'm 43. I mean,
you wait too much longer.
I mean, I got a bad back and everything.
I can't do it. My back hurts.
I wait any longer. What's the chances of that? And then you meet somebody who, now, Father Tom, I'll say this, and I don't mean to offend her in any way, and I've said this on the air before. I don't believe in soulmates. I don't believe she's, quote unquote, the one. I believe she's, quote, the one I love and want to be with the rest of my life, unquote.
But a few years left.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little easier at my age to make this kind of commitment because it's not like I'm talking 60 years down the road. I'm still with somebody.
Yeah.
But it just, when things are comfortable, when you find yourself doing things and saying things that were out of my character in our relationship, that's why. Then I go, well, that just makes sense. It's like, well, I don't want to not live together. Like, we'd like to live together.
You're not living together.
We're not. But we'd like to. We live in.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But we want to. Like, we want to spend more of time together. And the best way to do that is to get married.
That's pretty admirable right there. Are you open to having children?
Open, yeah. I think kids are a big pain in the ass, quite frankly, and they scare me to absolute death. But of course, they would be the greatest gift and the greatest.
Real test, because that's the self. That's the sacrifice of sacrifices.
No.
I stand in awe when people come up to me and they say, "Oh, poor you, you're a priest." I says, "Give me a break." I stand in awe before young married couples who decide to have children. Then I watch what the total gift means.
Right, Father Tom. Now, this is pre-Cana, so I can't do this to you. But did you ever want to have kids?
Oh yeah.
Does it not scare you? The thought of children scares me to. I don't think a sane person could actually say they want to have children. It's a tremendous burden to bring somebody into this.
It's a huge responsibility. But it's a great joy. And I was the oldest of six, so I became a babysitter early on, and I know what kids are about, and I've always loved being with kids and being with children, but it's a great sacrifice. And when you realize the obligation that's put on parents to educate and raise and transmit the faith to this child.
I mean, I can't transmit the faith on the air. Can you imagine? I got an audience of millions.
Big sacrifice.
Audience of one, I'm going to have no chance.
But people are brought together. You know, there's two, I would say to you, and I say to couples, there's twofold. There's the unitive and the procreative dimension of marriage. Those are the big theological words. But the marriage exists. John Paul II had this wonderful expression, the future of humanity passes through the family. That's pretty big. I mean, you and your wife, Mrs. Jill, you're going to be instruments and vehicles of the transmission of humanity. The future of humanity is going to go through you.
Now, do you say that at pre-Cana?
I don't say it like that, but okay. I talk to them. I get them to talk because I've prepared a whole variety of couples. Why would you like to get married? Because that church, it's the wood is so beautiful in the pictures.
Right.
And the carpet will really go well because it's a fall wedding and it's got those nice earth tones. I said, well, those are not the reasons why that we choose to get married. But many couples who have taken this seriously, and this is the big challenge for the church, you know, at the synod, if anything comes out of the next synod.
Who don't know what that is, there's this big event.
Big meeting, this big powwow in Rome in the month of October. And we're going to talk about marriage and family life. And I'm part of the synod. And if we don't come out of that synod with a renewed sense of marriage preparation and post-marriage preparation, continuation, where we have to have these wonderful marriage preparation programs like the one I'm doing with you now. We also have to look after the couples in the first years of marriage to provide a support system and a network with them.
Now, by the way, because I'll be bringing the Catholic Guy show. Now, this isn't pre-Cana, by the way. We've changed this.
This is pre-Cana.
No, you're promoting the synod.
Well, I would talk to the couples. I said, we take this so seriously. We're having a big meeting in Rome, and we're going to have bishops and priests and lay people and married couples because we're concerned about you.
All right. Now, tell me more about me. Pretend this is Father Tom Rosica, really pre-Cana. What else would you ask?
Where have you worked?
I work in, I have a radio show called The Catholic Guy.
What does prayer mean for you? Do you pray?
I pray in the morning and I pray at night, but I don't pray enough.
Have you ever prayed with your fiancé during these years of dating? I'm sure you've done all kinds of things, but have you ever prayed?
Every time we're together.
And what kind of prayer do you have?
Silent.
Do you ever pray out loud? Do you ever
No.
pray to God? Well, I would encourage then praying together, reading a passage of scripture together and praying together. I would talk to you about the ceremony. What kind of ceremony would you like?
Loud, short.
Loud and short. And asking all kinds of questions. Is there anything in this relationship which prevents you from having children? Have you put stipulations or
only me being old? You know what? What might prevent us from being married if she sees me naked? That could prevent her from any desires.
Those are big questions. Now, I don't get into those questions, but I would hope that you've dealt with some of those questions. But I would say it's important that you look at all the pictures. Tell me how you manage finances.
Oh, no, this is actually one reason.
This is the big stuff.
This is why I wanted to bring it up, in fact. She and I were talking about this just within the last few days when it comes to some of our finances and some student loans and some credit card bills, these sorts of things, right? And I was saying, well, let's just start. We're going to have a joint. Does the church say we should have a joint checking account?
The church doesn't say that. I mean, we leave that up to you and all the questions of taxation in the various countries that you're in. We encourage you to be honest. We encourage you to be just.
With taxes?
With everything. With the government.
I'm Italian.
You're a citizen. Well, that's part of the problem. It's a big risk.
You want me to be honest with the government when it comes to the IRS? I don't know. This is a let's have a separation of church and state.
You know what I ask, too? Another question I ask the couples.
No, I want to ask you about the finances, though.
Yeah.
Because we're actually discussing this right
finances
now.
Finances are one of the big issues, problems that exist in a couple's life. If it's going to be more difficult for a couple that's older, that you've been stayed in your ways, you've been established in your ways. And Lino, whether you like it or not, after the wedding, you got a little bit of a change of life coming, you know?
I was thinking about this. Do guys struggle with this? Because
big time. The older it is, sometimes it's more difficult. Because, look, you've been used to living on your own. Your apartment in New York. You've got everything you need. You've got your friends. You've got this. Now you got to deal with a joint bank account. You've got to deal with her furniture and your furniture, and she doesn't like your couch, and you don't like her paintings.
She loves my couch. She loves my couch. How dare you? That part is true. She loves the couch. And
so how do you come together to form this new home? You're not going to be living separately. Food, when you go shopping, little questions. I raise all of these practical things. Sometimes they look at me and they say, how do you know about this stuff? You're not married. I said, this is called common sense. Schedule. I go to the gym 5 nights a week and work out for 3 hours. And she's going to say, what about me? I'm going to sit home and wait for you? You're
no.
You're going to drag her to the gym.
See, like, one of the reasons why I think we're going to get married and it's going to be fine is because we've already worked all of those things
out. That's a sign of maturity. It's a sign of maturity.
It's the beauty of being
another
old.
Another thing I ask when the couples, and I interview her as well. Where do you live? Have you ever been married before? You're Christian. You're Catholic, hopefully. Tell me about your family. Any things that I should be aware of? Any impediments? But then when I bring the couple back together, I would ask both of you, and I ask this oftentimes, and they look at me like I'm from outer space. I said, do you have any poor people in your life? What do you do for others? I remember one guy saying to me, what the heck's that got to do with my marriage? I said, everything. I said, who are your friends? Who are your circle of friends? And are you a marriage that really works? People aren't jealous of one another and who their friends are, and they're constantly widening the circle to bring more people in.
So do I have to have more poor friends? Because, I mean, I've got plenty of priest friends, but
people for who can do nothing for you. They can do nothing in return. The gratuity of giving.
Well, I don't want friends. I don't want friends like that.
Well, then you gotta look at all those questions, you know?
Father Tom Rosica and my little pre-Cana here. Now, I wanted to work out a few questions. Prenups. Do we not do prenups in the Catholic Church?
Prenups. Prenuptials.
Yeah, prenup contract, you know? Yeah. Saying, hey, if this thing goes sideways on us, then she gets the couch or something.
We don't do exit clauses or documents like that. We talk about, I'm sure that you've had some arguments with her up until now.
Here, you want to know the honest to God truth?
Tell me.
We've had one argument in the entire time we've been together. I'm going to tell the story about the argument later on this week because it actually has to do with the Foo Fighters. That's the one that we've had one argument in our entire time together.
Count yourself blessed. Are you able to really talk to one another? Now you're all wide-eyed, starry-eyed. You know, it's the infatuation. It's the excitement.
No, it's but not. Things, it's none of that.
You don't say it is. Okay, so.
I'm telling you.
That's right. At 43 years old, I guess you worked through that for 20 years.
I don't have enough energy to be infatuated.
But I think realism. How did your parents deal with struggles? What did you learn from your parents? A lot of times when people come in and they say, my parents were split up and you know, there was a terrible thing. How are you going to deal with that situation? What scars do you bear through the whole thing?
Oh, boy. I don't want to think about my parents. I mean, that's...
And I'd ask you, what are you going to do differently? What do you think you're going to do differently after you're married? What difference is it going to make?
In my life, what difference is going to be?
Yeah.
It sounds like the only difference really will be we get to spend more time together. In my estimation, that's the one big difference when I get married, Father Tom, that... She and I get to spend time together that we don't get to do right now because we don't live together, because we live in different cities. And by the way, you know, I got to say, even I'm a little annoyed with the church. This is my pre-Cana right now, so I can do this. I'm annoyed with the church because we live in different cities. We live in two of the most expensive cities in America, and it would save us so much money if she could just move into my place right now. It would save us thousands and thousands of dollars, and we won't do it because the church doesn't want us to, but the church isn't against roommates. Do you see, like, do you see what I'm saying? Like, I really just
we're not talking about roommates here.
But we're not going to but we're not changing behavior. Okay, if she and I are okay together now, we're not going to be not okay together because she's staying at my place because she's moved in. Does that make sense?
Yes and no. I think the church has very good reason for saying marriage is a whole new way of life. This living together beforehand is not, I'm going to test you out and I'm going to keep an escape clause, because if I don't like you and you don't like me, it's splitto.
But that's not what this is. Like, do you see what I'm saying? I'm saying that she and I are we're wrestling with it right now, because we actually had this conversation where I said we would save so much money if she could move to my apartment. Okay, let's say we get married in 6, 7, 8 months, whatever it is. I don't even know. In 9 months.
Yeah.
We would save so much money, which is good financially. That builds a solid base.
Because you're building a nest egg for the future.
So that's a solid thing. Yeah. Right. But we don't want to do it because we know you're not supposed to you're not supposed to live together. But the
what's the church really teaching with all of that?
Don't have sex.
Okay. And what about that?
Okay, we're not.
All right. But you, so there's the what we call the cloudiness of it. Okay. Because I've had many couples tell me, especially when they're foreigners and they move over to the country.
Oh, Father, I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah. No, but they move to the country and they have to wait. And yes, it's a big challenge. It's a big sacrifice. And maybe we have to look at this and say, is there another way? Could you get married sooner? Do you have to wait the full year? Or do you have to wait until the hall is rented or whatever? There's all kinds of questions there. But the bottom line is, and you touched upon it, sexual relations in a marriage relationship is a huge gift. It's a huge blessing. And we teach in the church it's for married, committed people.
But I already know that.
Yeah.
But I'm not talking. But
you're talking about living together for very practical reasons,
right?
Economic reasons.
And we won't do it because I know how it looks. People would lose their minds.
Right. Non è bella figura. Okay.
That's right.
And you know, really, the Catholic guy and trying to justify something, it wouldn't be the bellissima figura. You
but
know?
It would be for my financial
statements. From a practical point of view, for bank statements, for tax purposes, for saving up for the future when you have the 6 kids, all of these things, it would be 5 kids.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that's driving me crazy is so, and this is exactly what I'll be doing in pre-Cana, by the way, which is why this is good practice for me on the radio show. Father Tom Rosica, working out my pre-Cana angst right now. The other thing that's annoying me is because we're going to get married in Rome, the Vatican already said, well, that's fine sacramentally, but you got to get civilly married in America first.
Right.
So my fiance and I one day are going to what? Just walk to City Hall.
Get a certificate.
And fill out the forms and be legally married?
And whose mark? The question is this. Whose mark is on you, though? The legal papers do not ratify your baptism to walk as a child of the light. It's a legal document.
I know. That's what I'm saying. But it's
Catholic,
so silly.
That sacramental marriage, and this is the big crisis we're in right now in the church, with all of the questions about marriage and everything else. Should the church get out of the marriage business in the sense of the legal part and let people do what they want, but when they're serious and they want the sacrament, then let them come to us and we'll give that. We still own the sacrament. We still preside over the sacrament of marriage. We have not lost that privilege.
I know, but that's great. But guess what? I got to go waste my time and I got to go get married civilly. That is the most bizarre that I have never.
I've known many in Europe, though. That's often the case. There's two marriages in
France. But I'm not European. I shower once or twice a day. I mean, you know that. I mean, what is this? I mean, I find the whole, like when I got that piece of information, I like almost everything. I understand it intellectually. And I'm going, excuse me. Are you telling me that one day I'm going to go and the state is going to determine that my fiance and I...
Because we're living here in society.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Give to Caesar what is Caesar's and give to God what is God's.
But we're not having an argument about it, but Jill and I did say, well, you know I'm not taking that seriously.
No, that's
right. I go, you know
it's
I'm wearing...
It's a legal document. We have to do a lot of things legal. Fill out this form, do this particular thing. This is part of the process.
How funny. Like, I'm going to wear a t-shirt, shorts, and flip-flops. Yeah. I'm going to walk in. And
hopefully you're not going to have a photographer.
And say, we'd like to get...
I'm getting married in 2 weeks now.
These are things that I had never thought about, right? It just, these are things I'd never... I mean, I don't know. I didn't know if I would ever get married, period. And then when you come to the point where you go, well, I am going to get married. I always just think about it in the church, and you sign some documents when you're in the church. But because I'm getting married out of the country, I mean, presuming it all works out, of course, and if I'm going to the Vatican, weeks before we get sacramentally married, I would actually be signing paperwork.
Yeah.
And legally, I would be a married man. That's the silliest thing I've ever heard of.
It's a piece of paper.
But it's hilarious. I got to do it because then I got to make a bit out of it. Because, I mean, do I get a party out of it? It's a weird thing, right?
You're allowed to have tea that night. a glass of grappa.
What's your biggest concern, Father Tom? Would you tell me in pre-Cana, Lino, here's my biggest concern about your marriage.
My biggest concern about your marriage?
Me.
And about every other marriage, it's the same concern.
Oh, I want to be special.
Are you willing to lay down your life for somebody else?
Of course not.
To give up your freedom, your independence, all of that stuff? Because it's a dying to self, and it's a whole new life in a new way.
Can I ask you something? Because isn't that the negative way of looking at life?
No.
Isn't that the way when somebody becomes a priest, you look at the negatives. You look at what you're giving up instead of what you're getting.
No, I say you are embarking on a thrilling journey. But you're going to embark on this in a way that you've never done before. It's a whole new thing. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. I know many couples that are thrilled and happy. Thank God. But they've all told me, wow, this required a real change of things. So how long am I going to spend in the bathroom in the morning? Well, we got one bathroom in the house, and she's got to go in the bathroom and wash up.
I'm going to get two bathrooms.
So that'll be one help, but not all couples can afford that. How are we going to go shopping? How much time am I going to spend with the in-laws?
Well,
what's the relationship I have with the in-laws? Where am I going to be for Christmas? Where am I going to be for Easter? Christmas Eve at her place and Christmas Day at your place? And, you know, all of those kind of questions. And they're oftentimes things that we haven't looked at. They can be filled with all kinds of tensions. But they can, if we work through them, it can be a very positive thing.
Am I totally naive that I just sort of go, well, yeah, that's just life. That you just work out those sort of things. But I've got so many friends, and I hear it mostly from my Catholic friends. My atheist friends seem very pleased. But my Catholic friends always talk about, well, you know, it's carrying your cross every morning and every day dying to self. And my atheist friends are like, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's life. It's real life. I love her and then I hate her. And I go, I like your attitude better than the Catholic attitude.
My first assignment in a parish as a young priest, it was in a big Italian community in southwestern Ontario. And there's this wonderful Lenten song that we sang in the Italian community there. And they sing it all over Italian communities. Ti saluto Croce Santa. I greet you, O Holy Cross. This man told me one day, he said, did you see me singing that song? And I said, yeah, you have a beautiful voice. He said, my arm was around my Holy Cross. I said, did you ever tell her that? He said, no. And he said, every time we'd sing that song, I put my arm around my wife. Ti saluto Croce Santa. Da, 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 da. It was very funny.
I greet you, the Holy Cross.
I greet you, my Holy Cross. I said, you're supposed to be singing that to Jesus on the cross. He said, she's standing next to me.
but do you see what I'm saying? Like, I've got real friends getting married going. It seems to me they practically focus only on the negatives of marriage. And then
it's
they're
beautiful.
Like, it's beautiful, but Lino, it's a cross to bury, my man. And I'm like, what?
I say to the couples, especially when I preside at the ceremony, the person next to you, the one you're going to grow older with together, you're going to grow older. You become vehicles, instruments. You are her ticket to heaven, and she is your ticket to heaven. Well, do you realize that?
She's not going then. that'd be a shame. I'll let Jill know now.
It's a beautiful thought.
It's a warning.
Know? There's all the earthiness of it, the realness. There's the romance. There's the eroticism. There's the beauty.
I know.
But then the fact of this is something beautiful. Two become one.
Now, she hates when she's like, how do we know this is going to work? And I go, we don't.
We don't.
See, thank you. That's what I told her. I'm like, we don't know.
There are no guarantees.
Father Tom Rosica is speaking gospel truth. When I say it, I sound like a negative guy. I go,
we walk by faith and not by sight.
I go, there's no guarantees. I said, we're giving this thing a good shot.
Yeah.
And we're going in with the best intentions. And we've talked about a lot of the stuff we need to talk about. And beyond that, I go, I don't know what I can tell you. I mean, we're not doing this for a green card or something at this point. We're both American citizens. Right. So what else can I tell her?
We walk by faith. This is a journey in faith. And that's the whole beauty of it. You don't have escape clauses. You're entering this for life.
Yeah.
And it's both trembling, frightening, beautiful, thrilling. But I also say to couples, too, there's somebody else entering in this relationship with you. You've chosen to get married. And you, of all people, in St. Peter's Basilica. You know what I would recommend to you? When you get there, go a little bit earlier. Go, first of all, and pray at the tomb of John Paul II, the great Pope of the family. I mean, if any pope taught us some beautiful stuff about marriage, just walk across. It's across from the...
I know where he is.
Okay. And then go and kneel down at Papa Giovanni, St. John the 23rd. Kneel down there and see that roly-poly Italiano. And just ask to have that kind of kindness and his love of family. And then go downstairs to the crypt.
I'm going to be very busy on my wedding day.
This is beforehand. This is a little workout.
Do this the
day
before.
Then you go pray. Kneel down before Blessed Paul VI. Blessed Paul VI gave us all kinds of important teachings about marriage.
No offense, he's not one of my favorites.
But ask, you need all the help you can get. Then you go, and then the following Wednesday after your wedding, show up with your bride all dressed in white, and be at the general audience, and let Papa Francesco take a selfie with you.
Now, Father Tom Rosica, you work at the Vatican. I mean, you're the English assistant to the Holy See press office. So you're a guy who's met Pope Francis more times than you can even remember, which is bizarre to me. My fiance and I have even talked about this. Now, for those who might not know, every Wednesday there's a thing called the general audience in Rome, where the Pope grabs an audience, tens of thousands usually, and he speaks rather generally on a topic. I believe that's where they came up with the name of it. And then at one moment of it, he greets people. Now, this is when I got a chance. It would be 1 year and 10 weeks ago today that I met the Pope.
He's reflected on that many times.
He's reflecting on
He's never been the same.
He's still enjoying that. Yeah. The glow, I'm sure, is very apparent. But then there's another part where he greets the wedding couples. The people who'd gotten married
Sposi Novelli.
Yeah. I know. The newly married.
You get good seats. You get a good gift, too.
But the thing is, it's weird because you have to, you get dressed up again.
That's right.
So you put the wedding dress back on. I mean, not me. She would put the wedding dress back on. You put the suit back on. That's a weird thing, Father Tom.
No, it's beautiful.
It's weird.
It's, well, first of all, get your money's worth out of all those clothes. I mean, the money that girls spend in the dress and it goes away in the mothballs.
We're selling it on
eBay. But it's also a public witness that the ceremony, and a lot of times this takes place a month or 2 months after. You guys are going to be there. It'll be a week after in this spa.
Right.
So for when a couple has to get dressed up again a month or 2 months after, I've heard couples say to me, it was sort of like doing it all over again. And when you're there, the Pope comes over and he's extremely warm and he talks to these couples and you can feel it, you know, and there's hugging and kissing and selfies and you name it. But more than that, it's a public witness that the future of the family is passing through. The future of the church is passing through these couples. It's just not old people or whatever.
Can't you pull some strings and just let me and Jill just meet the Pope on our own? Do I have to really get all dressed up again in the monkey suit?
How much you want to pay?
I'll pay whatever I need. Listen, I understand how the church operates. I mean, I'd be happy to pay a little.
I think your fans, it would be a really hot radio show that night. You know, Lino's at it again.
I don't want to get dressed back up. I think that part seems a little phony.
Well, you're not going
to
get good seats. As simple as that. You got good seats for that. There's a real
priority.
Pull
some strings. Wait a minute. When we're in October, between you and all the guys I know out there, it won't take that much. Just pull a few strings and let me meet the Pope again. With my wife this time. And I'll just be like, Holy Father, this is my wife. She'll faint and then whatever.
And you know what the Pope is probably going to say? Malino, finalmente.
Finally. That's right. He's like, thought you were going to be mired. By the way, Jill, one of my favorite jokes she told me once when we talked about the idea of marriage and growing old together. And I said to her, I wonder what you're going to look like when you're older. And she said back to me, well, Lino, I know what you look like because you're already old. So I thought, well, that's it. That's right where you want to be, isn't it?
That's right.
Marriage. Marriage.
It's a very beautiful thing.
It's all right.
It's a very, and for those who can succeed at it, it is a model for society. I don't encourage living together or not. There's so many couples that have not chosen to be married. They just want to live together. And the synod, the powwow bishops, is concerned about that. And I think it's wonderful when couples finally decide, even after having lived together, that they'd like the sacrament of marriage. We'd like to bless this. And, you know, even though it wasn't the perfect situation beforehand, at least come to the church and let's bless this and name what is good about it.
Yeah, but I don't blame anybody, quite frankly, because the church seems out of touch on most of these things, and especially, I think, Father Tom, would you even give this one? Or if I'm saying, why can't my fiance and I live together? It's going to save us a tremendous amount of money. And if it's like, well, you can't really do that, and I go, but there's no sin in having a roommate. There's no sin in saving money. And we're not just testing this out. We're actually saying, and by the way, we're not going to do this, right?
I would hope not.
But I mean, it, to me, it's really, if I was to say, tell you what, we'll give half of the money we save to a charity, and we're not risking our souls by being under the same roof. That, to me, seems like a win-win. That seems like the church meeting people where they're at in a logical, realistic way.
And we do meet people where they're at. It's not something I encourage, but I have met many people where they're at in that particular condition and invited them to come a little closer.
Of course, but we're on the way. We're on the way.
Yeah, you're almost there.
I'm almost there. I'm going to save all this money. Oh, the money, the thousands of dollars.
All I can do is thank God you're going to be able to walk to your own wedding at 43. You know, that's pretty good.
I'm going to be 44 when I get married, and let's just see how the body holds up. All right. Well, this is a good taste of what pre-Cana is going to be like.
Yeah, and there's a lot more fun, too, a lot more technical things we can get into, but this is the initial visit.
Technical.
Yeah, let's talk about some nitty-gritty things. What are you going to do when you have your first argument? How are you going to deal with these things? What are you going to do about...
We don't argue. We just don't. We've been together a year and two months now.
Well, then you went to the wrong office in Rome. You should go to the Congregation for Saints and apply.
When we argue, we'll just eventually she'll understand that I'm right and we can move on.
Even the Pope has said at the general audience, once in a while, dishes are going to fly, but at the end of the day, ask for forgiveness, for God's sake. Are you able to ask, I'm sorry? The Pope keeps on saying the most important words, thank you and I'm sorry.
Yeah,
those
we'll
are
do
very
that.
Important words.
We'll do that. But you got to admit, we're pretty good if we're 14 months into this thing and we had one argument.
It's not bad.
That's pretty good. In the argument, we'd had a few drinks. And I mean,
wait till you get home after this trip to Toronto.
We were both in the wrong.
Yeah.
And I am going to tell the story in its entirety just in a couple days, all right? We got to take a quick break. It's the Catholic Guy Show, broadcasting, as Father Tom Rosica just mentioned, from Canada, specifically Toronto, Ontario. He's the CEO of Salt and Light Catholic Television, not just Canada's home for Catholic television, but pretty much anywhere around the world, saltandlighttv.org. Also working at the Holy See Press Office, I got a few more questions for you about the popes. We've spoken a lot about Francis. We've spoken a lot about your buddy John Paul II. We haven't spoken much about Benedict. There was a story in the news that came out, and I wanted your thoughts because you know him too. Here's how I know you know him. You know what? I want to wait to tell the story because it's a type of funny thing that only Father Tom could get away with without knowing. What am I mean? Well, stay and find out. Catholic Guy Show continues after this.
Lino will be right back so he can get used to some of the Canadian terminology up here.
Why are you saying soda? It's pop.
We knew Lino would feel right at home in Canada, considering Minnesota basically has the same weather all year round, right?
The Catholic Guy Show in Toronto, Ontario. CatholicGuy.com. You find me on the Facebook or the Twitter, or the Periscope, the live streaming video app. Here with Father Tom Rosica, Salt and Light Television. SaltandLightTV.org is their website, and he's the English language assistant to the Holy See Press Office, which means he works for the Vatican in the area of press and communications. And you've known popes for years. You've worked for the church for years. John Paul II, you knew very, very well. Francis, you know very, very well. You haven't said a whole lot about Benedict the 16th, and I, in fact, you invited me to your home last night. We had dinner in your home. There's a picture of you and Benedict the 16th amongst the pictures of you and John Paul II and Pope Francis. And by the way, speaking of John Paul II, you had mentioned a couple days ago that here at the Salt and Light headquarters, you've got a chair
yeah.
that was used by John Paul II when he came here to Canada, right?
Well, we have a couple things, because when the Pope came for the World Youth Day in 2002, he also came 5 days early to take a little break, a little vacation. In fact, they remind me that it was the first vacation of the pontificate outside of Italy.
Nice.
And he stayed on an island called Strawberry Island. At the time, it belonged to my religious order, the Basilian Fathers. It's in Lake Simcoe, about 100 miles north of here. And we have a lovely, it was a lovely facility, a lodge. And so the Pope stayed there, and we had a, we built a special chapel for him in the big bunkhouse where he stayed, where he prayed 2 or 3 hours a day before the Blessed Sacrament. We set up the tabernacle. We had a chapel on the property, but he wanted something closer to his room.
By the way, I want the audience to know the same setup you provided for me, because obviously I'm here for a few days, and I also needed.
I provided at the Holiday Inn. We have a chapel for you, and yes, we have all of these things. And
I have a private chapel, because obviously we know I want to pray 2 to 3 hours a day as well.
I had to wake you this morning and say, get out of there. But anyway, we had this wooden chair, which was in the chapel area. And the night of the Stations of the Cross in Toronto, which really was the Pièce de Résistance in 2002, we moved the chair into the television area. So the Pope watched the Stations of the Cross from Strawberry Island. And that chair became very famous because we had a camera up there. And every now and then during the Stations of the Cross and the big screens downtown on University Avenue, they'd flash a picture of the Pope praying and watching the stations. And they were the only times when you heard these, the crowd, you know, in between the stations, moving from station to station.
Right.
And
well, that chair crowds don't typically cheer during the stations.
No, but they would see his image.
Right, but I'm just saying usually the fourth station, yay! That would be odd behavior.
No, that chair then was it became the presider's chair in the chapel of Salt and Light. And the altar in Salt and Light in our chapel is the altar from that celebration. And the chairs where the people sit in the chairs, the chapel, are the chairs of the concelebrating cardinals from the World Youth Day. We had 36 cardinals, and I kept all of those things. I was in charge of the World Youth Day, and I said, this will become the chapel for Salt and Light.
That's right. You were in charge, so you got to keep the chairs. But speaking of the chair, so I tweeted out a picture of it earlier today, me sitting in that very chair John Paul II sat in. It's a kind of cool thing.
And the power that would fill you. I watched you. It was like an electric moment for you.
Yes. So there's no denying, of course, all the times you knew John Paul II and all the times you still see Francis on a regular basis. And I asked you something about Benedict today, and you were looking through some photos. And again, this is how you know a Pope a lot, is you were flipping through, and it was just all the times you had met Benedict XVI, and you could tell it wasn't the same day. Haircuts had changed, location had changed. And you were just flipping through photo after photo of the events, and I'm going, this is not a normal world I'm in. This is not a normal experience where a friend of mine has met so many popes so many times. And so I thought a very funny story, which was, now of course we all know Benedict XVI retired. And if you didn't hear about that, I feel like that was a spoiler alert from a few years ago, but okay, fine. He and popes before him, they used to always go to a summer place called Castel Gandolfo. And it's nice to get away from the Roman heat and humidity and everything else. Well, Francis doesn't do that. But Benedict was like, well, listen, I mean, if the place is free. So he went up there for a few weeks on vacation,
That's right. He received 2 doctorates there 2 weeks ago. Two Polish universities gave him 2 honorary doctorates.
Which is, I know you can't say anything because you work for the Vatican, but that's just odd behavior. Like, hey, you know what we're going to do? He's out for a few weeks. Let's give him an honorary doctorate.
Benedict loved Castel Gandolfo. He loved the nature. He loved the beauty of the place, and I'm really glad he got to go out there. And Francis was very generous in extending the offer.
Now, is there any chance, because the Benedict was there for a few weeks, and he went back to the Vatican now. Do you think he just left the place a mess? Like, that to me would be very funny. If he was having parties, and he's carrying on, and let somebody else clean it up.
I'm sure the brow house was all cleaned up and everything else. I'm sure they left everything. Germans are very clean people.
Did he bring his cats with him?
I don't know.
Does he have cats? That was a question that was never answered from the Vatican over all of the years that he was Pope.
This is part of the Geheimnis des Glaubens, the mystery of faith. I'm sure there's a cat.
There is a cat. Did you ever see Pope Benedict?
No, I never saw the cat.
But it exists, right?
Yeah, there's even a book written about the cat.
So there's a cat out there somewhere.
It's a cat, yes.
He brought his cat to the Castel Gandolfo, right?
I don't know.
Of course he did.
I don't know.
We know.
We have not issued any statement from the Holy See press office about a feline accompaniment.
But you should. And this is what people want to know. This is what people are passionate about knowing. So you actually met him several times as well, right?
As Cardinal Ratzinger, yes, and as Pope. He appointed me to the Pontifical Council for Social Communications in 2009. He came to our meetings. But the funniest moment, you made me think about this today. You said, you've got to tell a story about Benedict. The funniest moment was after our World Youth Day. Our World Youth Day was in 2002.
Here in Toronto.
In Toronto. And the final act of the World Youth Day taking place in that country really takes place the Palm Sunday after, 1 year afterwards, the following Palm Sunday. It's when we bring the World Youth Day cross to Rome and we hand it over to the next country. It's like passing on the Olympic torch. And so I took 35 young people to that ceremony. When I went and got the cross, I took 35, representing 35 dioceses. And when I went and brought the cross back, 35 more from the other 35 dioceses, which means the whole country would have been part of all this. So we're in the lineup for that Palm Sunday Mass of 2003. We're inside the bronze door in that long hallway where you have the whole procession preparing to enter into St. Peter's Square. There's 70,000 people in the square. It's a glorious celebration. It really is the World Youth Day Mass every year. When World Youth Days are not in another country, they're held in Rome and in the local dioceses. So we're all lined up to come. And the cardinals were coming in to fall into the procession. They're coming in one by one, and many of them came over to us because, as I said, we had 36 cardinals come to our World Youth Day, and many of them were there at the Palm Sunday celebration. And they're coming over, and there we had the World Youth Day cross. I had a whole bunch of young people, and the cardinals are coming to greet us and hug us and say, it was a wonderful experience in Toronto, oh, and the Stations of the Cross, oh, and this. And the last cardinal to come in was Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger. And he walked right over towards me where the cross was. And you heard this buzz, Cardinal Ratzinger, Cardinal Ratzinger, as if he was some kind of a monster. This is the epitome of gentleness. And he came over and bowed. And I said, Eminence. I spoke to him in German. I speak German. I said, where were you? You didn't come to Toronto last summer.
Nine.
And he said, nine. He says, it's so much noise. I don't go to that. My brother and I watched it all on TV. We were in Germany. We watched it on TV. So everybody came, what did he say? I said, he didn't come to World Youth Day.
But everybody kind of knew that.
Well, speed this forward. This is 2003 and 2005. John Paul II dies. And one of the first big things that Pope Benedict had to do was to go back to his Heimat, his homeland in Germany, for their wild World Youth Day of Cologne. Now, my colleagues...
Now, by the way, for those just tuning in, they didn't have a Youth Day built on Cologne, the scent. There's a city in Germany called Cologne, Germany.
Cologne, okay. So we're in Cologne, and my colleagues in Germany who had worked with us in our World Youth Day, they said, look, we're going to have this big entrance of Pope Benedict coming into the city of Cologne. We're going to bring him on this big boat on the Rhine River, and he's going to come in behind the cathedral, and then we're going to walk him up through Old Cologne to the cathedral, that magnificent cathedral, and there the Pope will greet the crowd. And they said, we want you to be on the boat with us. So they had the previous directors of World Youth Days, who are still alive.
And by the way, this is not like some small dinghy. This is a yacht.
No, this is, and the boat ride alone left a lot to be desired because the river is very wide, and people didn't really prepare the procession or the route of this boat. And so I remember coming around the bend on the boat, and the boat, the lower decks were bishops and then cardinals. The upper decks was Pope Benedict and all of these kids from all over the world in flags. And the boat comes around the bend, and the first thing we see, it was like an image of the Garden of Eden. There was a whole nude beach on the right-hand side.
This is the greatest story.
And it was just incredible. Watch, and people, and you heard all the bishops and cardinals say, no, guarda l'altra cosa. Look at the left, look at the lovely cathedral. In the meantime, we're looking at the Genesis story unfolding before us on the right. It was hideous. You know?
The beach, first of all, nobody who goes to a nude beach is somebody whose body you would like to see at a nude beach. It's never the one you want to see.
And there they were. I can still see them all on the banks of the river. Oh, Heilige Father, So we came around.
But no, Father Tom, just real quick.
You didn't do it in Toronto.
You've ran World Youth Days before. Does anybody get fired for putting poor Pope Benedict XVI on a boat and he's supposed to see a million, 20 and 30 somethings from around the world, And as the boat's cruising down the Rhine, he sees instead a bunch of middle-aged nudes. I mean, does anybody get fired?
It was one of the first moments of pause of the, you know, everything is supposed to be so orderly. I often think the World Youth Day in Cologne, everything was perfectly in order until the first pilgrim arrived. Then all hell broke loose. And even the Pope made fun of that. Pope Benedict made, he said, you know, you've seen us in a whole different light now, the German people. So we got off the boat and we're walking up through the narrow streets to the magnificent cathedral in Cologne. And you see in the pictures, there was the Holy Father and a group of kids. And then the four of us, the director of the World Youth Day in Cologne, myself, somebody from Paris and from Australia. And now the person in Australia, of course, is the Archbishop of Sydney, Archbishop Anthony Fisher. So we're walking behind the Pope up to the cathedral. When we got inside the cathedral, the Pope's secretary turned the Pope around and he introduces him to the four of us. This is the director of the World Youth Day in Paris, and this is Toronto. And the Pope looked at me and he said, oh yeah, we know, I know you. And I said, yes. And I said to him, you had to come to this one. I said, there was a lot of noise. And he was beaming, but it was very clear. And another funny moment with Pope Benedict, they had the Marienfeld, the big field where the big vigil was going to be held in the final mass. And they built this man-made mountain hill in the middle of it in order to accommodate the altar. And it was quite the sight. It was on the outskirts of Cologne. So my friend Bishop Boccardo, Monsignor Renato Boccardo at the time, was the master of ceremonies, if you will, or running the whole World Youth Day part. When they brought the Pope up on the hill, and there's a million people in the field, the Pope mobile comes up, and Bishop Monsignor Boccardo at the time had told the Pope in the morning, tonight, when we get there for the vigil, you go to position one and just raise your hands and greet the crowd.
And we're talking about maybe 2 million people.
It was a million on the Saturday night and then 2 million on Sunday. So the Pope came off the Pope mobile, stepped down on two orange crates that were there because they put a towel or something on it so it looked elegant. And he goes over to the edge of the hill and he stands there. And nobody could see him. So Monsignor Boccardo ran over and he said, lift your arms. And so the Pope right here. Then he went to position two and position three to do this. And you can tell this is the professor who did not have the theatrics of John Paul II. He didn't have all of those special modes, nor Pope Francis. But he grew into it in a remarkable way through his papacy. Watching him from the beginning, and then watching him in Sydney, for example, it was really a feast for the senses.
But there's no better story. There's no better feast of the senses story. I'm sorry, Father Tom, than poor Pope Benedict, who 3 years beforehand here in Toronto didn't even come to the World Youth Day there because he's like, it's too loud, it's too annoying. As a cardinal, he didn't have to. He gets elected Pope. He has no choice but to go to the World Youth Day. He gets on a boat that somebody else planned for him, and his first experience is nudists on the nude beach. If that doesn't sum up his papacy, I don't know what does. A guy who's like, what are you people doing to me? What on earth situation have you found? I found myself
in? If only
in
he
now?
Would be able to say, it's Germany, Joya. I'm not sure that he saw it because he was surrounded by kids at his position. But the rest of us are looking saying, my God, did they map out the parade route? There were a lot of incidents like that. Every World Youth Day has very special moments.
Well, the Catholic Channel has brought our listeners many World Youth Days. We will be doing so again next year in Poland.
I'll be there.
My friend Father Dave Dwyer and I, our friend Brett Sedell, we've done many of these. I'll tell you one thing, Father Tom Rosica, we've never seen nudes. And I was there in Cologne, Germany, and I didn't even see the
Germany.
Nudes.
Only in Germany.
Oh, and but for anybody who's jealous, honest to God, you don't want to see German nudes. No offense. But
all I can say, I praised God, Laudato Si, that the river was so wide.
That they were far enough away.
They were far enough away from the boat.
What? There is no greater, you said the senses, though. There's no greater visual than nude people waving to the vicar
Genesis.
Of Christ.
It was Genesis.
It's just the best. It doesn't get better than that. Well, Father Tom Rosica, you're the best. We always have fun with you here as my co-host in Toronto, Ontario. He's the CEO of Salt and Light Catholic Media, saltandlighttv.org. You've heard me mention it several times this week.
Follow us on Twitter.
Do it.
Follow our Twitter handle, Salt and Light TV, at Salt and Light TV. And you can follow me, too. That's the only time I'll say follow me. Follow because I give you all kinds of good church stuff, at Father Rosica.
Because he's the English language assistant to the Holy See Press Office. That means usually when the Pope is saying something or the Pope spokesperson is saying something and they're doing so in Italian or Spanish, when the world gets it in English, they get it in part thanks to what Father Tom Rosica does, and he does it for free. That's a bad paying job.
We pay to serve.
All the hours, all those hours. But that, you know, it's kind of interesting, right? How things function and how things work in the church. That's, you know, we don't have a Pope who speaks English or anything. So a lot of the stuff, when it gets transmitted, when there are questions and not even arguments, but understandings need to be clarified, whatever, that the Vatican needs to put out, Father Tom Rosica is one of them. Now, he also played a big part in understanding what I should be doing today for Father Dave's 30-day challenge. So coming up, it's the Busted Halo Show, of course, with our friend Father Dave Dwyer. And he does the Father Dave challenge, the 30-day challenge, you know. And this year, I am participating in it as well. So many of you called in. We couldn't get to all the calls. Many of you wrote on social media. We didn't get to all of that as well. But CatholicGuy.com, of course, on the Facebook and the Twitter. And I'm going to be participating in it in some way. Father Tom, before I let you go, what was your favorite suggestion so far? People said I shouldn't make fun of my nose anymore. People said I should do one nice thing every day. Maybe I should say something nice about myself on the air. Maybe I should give a little mini homily based
on
the readings.
Two things I liked a lot. Take 1 month and write a letter or a card to somebody. And the second thing is, prepare some little reflections. In the midst of all of the laughter and the jovial nature and everything, give people some good food.
Listen, if they want good food, they should...
I can come here. I'll cook for
them. Yeah, there you go. We got Father Leo.
Give him a little thought, a little reflection.
All right. So those are his votes.
Father Dave, 30-day challenge. Father Dave, 30-day challenge.
Father Dave's going to be voting. You're going to be taking votes as well, however.
Oh, my gosh. What shall you do?
Father Tom wants me to do a little mini homily on the air every day. Maybe
reflection,
say something.
Reflection.
Say something nice about myself. Who knows? We'll see.
That is so much easier than giving up Purell.
That's right. Thanks for listening to the Catholic Guys Show. Take care and God
bless.
Bye,
guys.
Bye-bye.